If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to another episode of Game Runs Deep. I'm Sudhi Upadhyaya, he's Ben Garrett, and we are back after one hell of a week of college football. Week five was everything and more. I got a chance to go down to Oxford, Mississippi to watch the Ole Miss Rebels beat the mighty LSU Tigers, sat next to my buddy Ben Garrett. And Ben, what's up, man? Anything going on in your life right now?
Man, God is good. God is sovereign. I only, in everything I do, wait to see what God will do. I'm blessed, brother, better than I deserve. And spending that time with you on Saturday, here's the short of it. It was such a special Saturday, not because Ole Miss beat LSU. I mean, that was a big deal, and we're going to talk about it. But I wasn't going. There was a lot of stuff going on. I'd make the decision not to go. But Sudhu was in town, and he just made me come. He pulled me out. That sounded awful. He pulled me out. Pulled me out of the doldrums of sitting on my butt and being in despair, and said, come watch a football game with your friend. And that's exactly what we did. And there was some ball learned that day. But more than that, the fellowship with my dude was exactly what I needed. It was so uplifting. I'm so thankful that you got me out of the house. More than that, I'm so thankful that I got to spend that time with you. And what a game it was, my guy.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Ben and I sat there the whole game, and you know, we watched the ups and downs throughout the first half and everything. But every time something would happen, and Ben would get a little stressed. He would say, "Well, I looked at him. I said, Ben, we're gonna win the bleeping game.
Yep.
We're going to win the bleeping game over and over." And that's something we talked about on the podcast last week. I thought this Ole Miss team, and we're going to start with Ole Miss here today. So if you're listeners from other fan bases, we will get to the wild week that week five was and talk a little week six. But we're going to start with Ole Miss right now.
Ty Simpson, and you're the man.
Anyway, we're going to get to that, no doubt. But I sat here last week and I watched LSU play all season long. And I said, this team is overrated. They do not deserve the rating that they're at. And I knew that Ole Miss's offense was way more dynamic than it was even a season ago. And, you know, some of the clips we posted on social media, people came after me. They said, you're saying that a Jackson Dartless offense, a Trey Harrisless offense is better than a year ago? And I said, yes.
Yes.
And it's not a knock on those guys. It's what this offense brings on the ground. I said that
a week ago.
I said this receiving core was deeper than a year ago.
Preach, friend.
And listen, let's give some love to Ole Miss's offensive line. This was, to me, the weakest unit on this team. I still think it is, or not on the team, rather, on the offense. I still think it is, but they held their own. I was giving Diego Pound some tough love up there in the press box, and Ben defended him, and there were multiple plays as the game went on. I looked at Ben. I said, Diego Pound's actually been playing well.
Say what you never say.
He was good. Ole Miss's
offense. You were right.
Ben, you were right. Ben, you're right. See, it's not even in my vocabulary. It's not even in my mind.
Yeah, because for me, I'm sitting here going, Sudhu, you're right. Absolutely. I'm just waiting for one, like, you know, Ben got one right. Oh, a win for the little guy. Let's go. Woo!
No doubt. But it played out the way I thought it would. Whether Garrett Nussmeier is hurt or not, I came into the season saying I don't think he deserved the love and praise he was getting. And I think as the season has wore on, we're seeing a lot more of that. But Ben, let's just start there, man. I mean, we got to start really with Trinidad Chambliss, because we knew he was the X factor. He was going to be the one that was going to be able to change this game with his legs. And he really did that.
Mm-hmm. He absolutely did. And that's the thing, because I know what the question is. We could break down the game. It's been days now. They could say, all right, what looked great and stuff. The bottom line is, yes, he had his first bad play, really bad play, regrettable play, the interception of 50-50 ball that I didn't hate the decision. Yeah. I just hate the chance that he took when he didn't have to.
Sure.
They didn't pay for it. It happens. But through the first three games of his SEC career, which is only going to be a year most likely, unless they get an unprecedented waiver, and the NCAA is handing out waivers, you know, like it's nobody's business these days. So maybe it works for him, and that would be such a boon for Ole Miss, obviously. But through his first three starts in the SEC, a first-year SEC starter, he's the only player in league history with three straight games of 300 yards passing and at least 300 yards passing and at least 50 yards rushing. What a performance. What a story it is. A former zero-star transfer or prospect recruit, excuse me, transfer from Division II Ferris State, who before Ole Miss swooped in after the spring practices, knowing the need they had behind Austin Simmons, was going to Temple. And I'm not knocking Temple. I'm just saying the option changed, and he took advantage, and he's capitalizing on this opportunity. This has nothing to do with a failure of any sorts for Austin Simmons. Austin Simmons is still very much the upside quarterback and player and prospect for the next level and all those things as he was coming into the year. This is about the success of Trinidad Chambliss. It doesn't have to be one or the other. And right now, Trinidad Chambliss has taken advantage of an opportunity. The reason why he came here, because if he got an opportunity, he wanted to be at the highest level and prove himself, and he's doing that. That should be celebrated less than, hey, what's going to happen in 2 weeks? You think they go back to Austin Simmons?
Can I interject real quick?
Because
a thought just came to my mind. And the circumstance I'm going to compare it to is different in a lot of ways. But if you're an Ole Miss fan and you're worried about, oh my goodness, if Trinidad keeps playing, Austin Simmons will leave, I will ask you to look at Georgia, okay, a couple years ago with Stetson Bennett, okay? Stetson Bennett kind of came out of nowhere, right? He was this walk-on kid. He'd been on the team, then he came back, and Carson Beck was your prospect that was supposed to become the next starter, the four-star, five-star kid from high school, the surefire. He was a dual-threat quarterback, actually, funny enough, coming out of high school, but he was the guy that was kind of, okay, he's going to be our next starter. And Stetson Bennett sort of won that job under completely different circumstances from Chambliss and Simmons. Simmons actually won the job. He's just hurt now, right? But
right.
But Stetson Bennett played better than Carson Beck in practice, and ultimately you saw what happened with Georgia. And in some ways I can see the parallels here with that, as in if Austin Simmons bides his time and stays patient, even if Chambliss remains a starter throughout the year, Simmons will still get his shot, because Chambliss isn't going to be here for, like you said, more than a year. So I don't think it's as stressful as some Ole Miss fans are making it out to be. I know there's the factor with his dad, and he's very involved, and I'm sure he wants his son to play. And, you know, he's basically raised him to be a competitor and be a starting quarterback. But I would sort of look at that situation. Also, completely different times at Georgia, too. That was before NIL really took off. But I was thinking about that a little bit, and it just kind of came to mind of like, hey, it's okay, man. Trinidad can play this season. As long as Simmons knows that I'm the next guy up and I'm going to have an opportunity, I don't think it's as stressful as maybe some Ole Miss fans are making it out to be.
I think that's extraordinarily well put. I agree with it completely. And even if it were something that Ole Miss was stressing about, the decision has been made. And I don't mean that in any – this has nothing to do with any type of failure or rejection or anything untoward towards Austin Simmons. This is a celebration of an individual accomplishment. I hate – and that we all hate it, that it comes at the expense of someone else's journey. But it's just a part of your journey, young man. You still got – I don't like bringing up the money component because it brings about cynicism, but Austin is one of the highest paid players on the team, which is a big business. I mean, he is being well compensated, being taken care of. He was celebrating with Trinidad after the game. Great pictures from USA Today. Go find it. It's of him and Trinidad. I mean, he was so excited. He's been a great teammate.
Yeah.
Austin Simmons is doing everything right. I agree that I've heard things. I have not verified them independently, so it's just like every other opinion, an asshole, but it's a pretty informed opinion. An asshole stink, but his dad isn't happy. He wasn't happy during the game against LSU. He wasn't particularly celebratory after the win over LSU. Again, don't know if that's – I haven't verified that independently, but that's what
just
the word around town is. That's the
right
rumblings I've heard.
Right.
And – if that's the case, I hate that, because I think it's a short-sighted view. If Austin, let's say the worst scenario for Ole Miss fans played out, and if that's Trinidad Chambliss is so good, Austin can't play, and they go to the college football playoff, darn, what a nightmare.
Right.
oh, no. Please don't let that happen.
In a lot of ways,
Austin
though,
Simmons,
Ben.
Austin Simmons will get into the portal, right?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Lane Kiffin is the quarterback whisperer. Everybody wants to play for him. Like, Ole Miss would have options. It might be a DJ Lagway. You know, it would be hilarious and fun, the most college football thing in the world, Arch Manning. You know, like, there's so much stuff that could
there's
happen.
There's a kid in Auburn, Alabama right now that Ole Miss was really close to getting, that whose coach may be gone.
And Deuce Knight was really close to being an Ole Miss Rebel, and now you would get him on a discounted rate. It's why Ole Miss doesn't pay top dollar for high school classes just to have a good promotional day in February or November on ESPN. They actually it matters for them cost assessment and analysis and what is the right decision for the business, and Lane Kiffin is the CEO, makes the final call. And sure, so far he's been overwhelmingly right more than he's been wrong. So quarterback, he will get a quarterback. He got Jackson Dart after Matt Corral. He actually had Cam Ward on campus before that, almost got both of them at the same time. And Cam Ward became the number one pick in the draft. And Jackson Dart is now starting for the New York Giants. Trust Lane Kiffin in that way. Ole Miss has done nothing but do right in the best interest it can, like within its power, to take care of Austin Simmons. I hope his dad, if that is the case and he's thinking that way, that he reconsider. Because you're not going to make more money than you're making now in the like if you get into the portal. That's not going to happen. You'll be diminished goods like Nico was. There's another option for Lane Kiffin. Like, you know, they're in a similar
I think this is good for Austin in some ways as well, to for him to become a leader. Because I'll tell you what, man, just watching him on the sidelines go to Trinidad after he scored and celebrate with his teammates. And then I even saw, you know, somebody post on Twitter, I think it was a screenshot of, it was a Bible verse or something that Simmons had posted. But it almost, you know, I don't know how some people took it. I took it as him saying, I needed to be better and this adversity is making me better. That was my read on it. And I think
that would be a great perspective in what I'm talking about. Like, I just hope that Austin and his dad can find some uniformity and commonality and actually assess it on a rational way. I know y'all been waiting for this, man. I know I get it. Y'all been waiting for this for a long time, and it was finally here, and he's done nothing. And I agree with you. This isn't about failure or rejection or anything. It's frustrating, but God's timing is perfect. So if you stay at Ole Miss, you still might get the job back next week. Like, there's no guarantees here. It's just Trinidad Chambliss is now the number four best betting favorite for the Heisman. This is just an extraordinary story.
The whole talk of, like, who's the starter now, to me, I said it last week. I said,
it's
Chambliss,
wall right now.
It's done, because I said, if he beats LSU and he looks good doing it, it's his job. I think the decision has been made for Lane. I know Lane, you know, Andre Adelson, I believe, asked him after the game, and he wasn't committal about it, and because he's got to play politics, right? He's got a father and a kid to appease, obviously. But I think the decision's been made. I know
agree.
We're
Lane would agree with you. You were sitting there in the post game.
Yeah.
I mean, you heard what he said. Like, he said openly, and Lane is not particularly forthcoming with injury information or his decision making or why he did things or what's coming. He has to be guarded. That's what good CEOs do. It's risk evaluation. I mean, it's risk evaluation in all things. He's gaming the injury report. Everybody's gaming the injury report in some way. You really want to become a stickler for that, like you're a stickler for letting Laramie Tunsil sleep on a coach's couch because he didn't have a bed to sleep on that night? You really want to play this game? Everybody does these kind of things. He's trying to protect his players and his team and his business and stretch the confines of everything as far as he can. What does that sound like? Every area of business, every politics, Hollywood, name it, everyone tries to stretch the boundaries, because if you don't, there's no guarantee of anything. They'll just drop you like it was nothing. They can do that. So you have to protect what is yours and what is Lane Kiffin's, and these players, this staff, this community. So, like, he's trying to win games. That's the ultimate goal. That's the whole point of this experiment. At the end of it all, he's trying to go 1-0 every single week. And right now, he's 5-0, and three of those wins have come from a now Heisman candidate in Trinidad Chambliss. This is settled law for now. I just hope that all sides can have some grace about it and have some real optimism. What a problem for Ole Miss to have.
Yeah, right.
What an incredible problem. After the historic and record-breaking, record-setting career from Jackson Dart, who in the modern era of Ole Miss football is second only, and it's arguable, to Eli Manning in terms of production and where he ended up on all-time list. This is a player who would have I don't believe in retiring numbers. I think numbers are numbers. Like, do Ring of Honors everywhere, but let numbers be numbers. But if Ole Miss continues with the practice of retiring numbers, he will be in consideration however many years from now, maybe after his a Hall of Fame career in the NFL, for having his number two retired and no one wearing it again at Ole Miss. Right now it's being worn by Harrison Wallace and Jalen Braxton. You know, like no one can wear 10. The speed limit is 18 at Ole Miss. And you know what? That could it could be changed to 13 one day too. Your story's not finished at all.
Sure.
Not even remotely. For this not season though, and for the end game and for the Ole Miss community of which you're a part of, Austin and Trinidad.
Yeah.
It's not a conversation to have, because what an extraordinary celebration of individual accomplishment and God's grace. You know what Trinidad Chambers has been doing all like since day one, since this started? Before, he had three straight. Just after the one start, when everybody was like, dang, where did this guy come from? To God be the glory.
Yeah.
This isn't a – no one has failed here. And right. And you will. If Austin – I don't know what particular scripture he was quoting, but If your interpretation of it is that's really how he's thinking, what a mature, incredible response.
I think that's what I'm saying. I think the opportunity for Austin here is, hey, you know, didn't go my way. I'm going to be happy for my brother. And yeah. I have the opportunity, like you're saying, man, this is the SEC. I mean, this is major college football. You're one injury away from getting right back into it. Whether that's in the playoff.
Or one disastrous performance. Like,
exactly. Look at Tua. Look at Tua in that national championship, right?
It's a three-game sample size so far.
Right.
It's a great story, but it might only be a three-week story. We don't know that.
Yep.
So if he goes out there and just completely lays an egg against Oklahoma, all of those questions will come back up again, as they should. They're valid, but for now, it's not a conversation.
No doubt about it. And he's young, and he's got – so he has the opportunity to grow. And
yeah, nothing has changed. Like you're just as much the prospect and valued player as you were coming into the year when you were making the media tours before you'd even taken a snap as a starter. Like you went on every show. You were taking the SEC media days. You got to do things that a lot of players it takes them 3 years to get to that level of even consideration for those things.
Yeah,
consider yourself blessed. And this is going to sound cynical, but like, you know, go cry into your millions. But I don't think Austin's that kind of kid that we would have to be disrespectful in that way.
Sure.
I think he's a good kid, and I think he's handling it great. I hope all parties continue, or if they're not there yet, lean on grace and know that nothing has changed. This is all good stuff. What a problem.
Yeah.
Ole Miss is winning, Trinidad Chambliss is succeeding, and Austin Simmons is every bit the badass he was coming in. To God be the glory. Let's just you celebrate the accomplishment of Trinidad Chambliss, but not demean the other. That has nothing to do with him. It has nothing to do with failure on his part. And, you know, we haven't even really talked about where Ole Miss is. They're now number four in the country.
Which makes me a little nervous, obviously. And you and
of
I were sitting –
it does, because you're still an absolute diehard, unapologetic homer about Ole Miss. It's just true.
And we were sitting up there talking this week, and you said, you know,
I was figuring to say, well, that's the pot calling the kettle black, man, or something.
Well, I didn't even need to say that. I think, you know, the people that know us would know
that. Hold up.
Right.
Hold up.
But you said number seven would probably make the most sense. And I agreed with you, but I was even hoping, I said, Ben, I hope they underestimate this team and put them at 10.
Said it during the game too. It was like, we're going to win this game. And when we do, dude, I hope they like rank us eighth or like nine.
I just
the disrespect thing.
I just because it is it. I do. You know, I know we all laugh about the rat poison thing, but it. I believe in it because year in and year out, especially in the case of Ole Miss, you see it with tons of other teams too. I feel like when Ole Miss gets a lot of love nationally, the following week or a couple weeks, you kind of come back down to earth. And so I don't like to build up a team too much after just one win. This is Ole Miss's best SEC win. It's a hell of a win for them against a good LSU defense, albeit a bit overrated.
I keep interrupting you. Hold your thought. But, like, seriously, folks, I mean, that's what I do is my day job. That's what my job. This podcast is my favorite blessing in my job every week. But, like, my day job is I write and talk about Ole Miss for On3's Ole Miss site. Just search it, Ole Miss on 3, hit join. You can sign up for $1. And I have been saying it since it happened. That was the – inarguably one of, if not the best and most complete win of Lane Kiffin's tenure at Ole Miss. Yes, it was 24-19, but me and Sudo were sitting there. We watched every snap and everything and every development, everything as it happened in real time. It wasn't that close.
It was not. And, I mean, you give up over 100 yards in penalties, whether you agree they should have been penalties or not. You had a fumble on a drive that you should have probably scored a touchdown. There's so many opportunities that Ole Miss could have, you know, essentially stomped on this LSU team.
You remember 2008, Ole Miss went to LSU with Jevon, God rest his soul?
Yeah, I do.
They dumped them 31-13. It was way closer to being that score, the way that game played out, than it was what it ended up being, 24-19.
No doubt about it.
LSU really, after Ole Miss took the lead and sustained the only real push, like that first real push. I mean, LSU came out and they were taking it to Ole Miss now, but Ole Miss was – it was just hanging in and hanging in, and they took the best shot LSU had and had all the momentum, and it was 7-3. The minute they took over and they were leading, even when it's 10-7, I have seen every consequential Ole Miss LSU game since 1993. Like old Ben, little Ben would have been, you know, chomping at his nails and go, "Oh gosh, finally big bad LSU. Ole Miss might beat big bad LSU." They're not big bad LSU anymore. No. Ole Miss has risen to that place as a program. To where, yes, those teams, they're still good. They're still awesome. They're still tough as hell. But Ole Miss isn't the little engine that wish it could. It's there now. LSU last year, in what was considered an upset, because they're saying, well, oh, very little brother behavior because Ole Miss played Neck. Go on SpiritBit on Twitter. They play Neck, which is funny. But that's like petty college football stuff that you should love. Like, yeah, you want them to talk shit like that.
Anybody would do that, by
anybody.
The way.
I've seen all of these games, and I'm used to being nervous, or it's big bad LSU. How could Ole Miss, little Ole Miss, overcome this? These teams are even now. You know, a lot of y'all were talking this your crap online about, oh, the little brother and this, that, and the other. The reality, folks, is that Ole Miss and LSU are at worst right here now in terms of how they compete on the field. Resources, y'all got it. But how Ole Miss allocates its resources, and how in my opinion, the best CEO for situation, what he has, and how he goes about his business in a proven track record is Lane Kiffin. From a competitive on the field, it only matters about going 1-0 every week. Y'all are now here. You can accept it if you want, or you can reject it if you want. But last year, y'all rushed the field for Ole Miss when y'all beat Ole Miss. Little Ole Miss. Ole Miss didn't rush the field this year when they beat LSU. They expected to.
You also, I've said this for many years, Brian Kelly is massively overrated as a coach.
Yes, you have. I can vouch for you.
He had great success at Notre Dame, but let's be real. Those Notre Dame schedules are nothing like the rigors of the SEC.
It is true.
And obviously he's had some highs, but he's had a lot of mediocrity. And I think, you know, the best example of Brian Kelly not being better than Lane Kiffin, because those people will have those discussions and say, well, Kelly's better. You know, he's actually been to a national championship.
He is not. I disagree. Not in 2025.
I 100% agree. Is look at the way Lane Kiffin coaches versus Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly absolutely throws his guys under the bus. There was a moment where Garrett Nussmeier had to call a timeout. And I mean, just the body language, the way he went after his starting quarterback in a moment where he should have done everything to calm his guys down,
hey, Sue,
to instill confidence in his guys.
Vibes, what were the vibes like? Didn't look very good, is all I'm saying. The vibes, they were not good.
They were not good at all. And just the decisions that were made, like there were so many little things that I wish I took notes on that I was kind of keeping track of throughout the game that made me go, good God, man, Brian Kelly's getting outcoached like by a large margin here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? By a very large margin here. And year after year, I say it. I think Brian Kelly's a top 15 coach, but he's not a top 5 coach. He's not a top 10 coach. Lane Kiffin's a top 10 coach.
Yep.
And I think that game was just another example of that. And you could make the case this should have been Ole Miss should have 3 straight over LSU. Obviously, last year, I think where I'll
please tell them. Please tell them. He pulled it out. He pulled out his phone during the game. I mean, just tell them. Come on, because like you're standing on your business because it's not going to hurt any feelings.
Listen,
okay. He's your quarterback now, and you love the guys at Ole Miss Rebel.
It's
true.
I love Dart. I love Dart, but I think Dart was a problem in Baton Rouge a year ago. And I will say now, to Dart's credit,
receipts though, folks.
There were some
tough ones, but like that happens.
I made a cut. So Ben's referring to the fact that I made a cut up of all of Jackson Dart's throws from LSU a year ago. And I showed it to him in the game because people try to tell me on TikTok and YouTube and whatever. It was like, you're saying that your team led by a D2 transfer is better than Jackson Dart? And I said, Ben, just tell them to go watch the game. Jackson Dart had some awful throws. What didn't help was the fact that Lane Kiffin didn't let his best running back on the field after a huge touchdown run. After that, you barely saw him on the field. So that didn't help Dart's case, obviously. But Dart had 27 rushing yards. He had a touchdown and an interception. And if you go watch the rest of that game,
wasn't Trey Harris or somebody hurt? Jordan Watkins? You know what I mean? Like
Trey Harris was hurt. That was the Caden Lee game. And Caden Lee played a great game. But
like he had to press. Like he had fewer options than Trinidad has. Far fewer options.
No doubt.
Juice Wells was a bust until the bowl game.
No doubt. But I will say, like, Dart had...
He was misused. I mean, I think Lane and them, they messed that one up. They tried to make him a slot guy. And then now look at me. Sure. He's on the, you know, the practice squad with the Giants, even despite a letdown, you know, season at Ole Miss. But once he got into the bowl game, changed numbers too. They put him outside, and he did what he was Juice Wells again. The Juice Wells that they thought they signed from South Carolina that everybody in the country wanted.
No doubt. And so it's like, I don't want anybody to think that I'm hating on Jackson Dart, but I was just trying to show Ben, like, hey, this is the difference I was talking about. Mm-hmm. Dart took a lot of chances, and his balls, they weren't pretty either, though. The chances he took, I mean, he's throwing in double coverage, he's underthrowing, overthrowing, not one of his best games. And I was just trying to tell him to juxtapose with what was going on Saturday. I was like, you got a lot more calmer quarterback, granted it's at home. There's so many little caveats. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't want to just trash the game Dart had a year ago.
But the point is...
But it made a difference this year. And the quarterback you had under center made a difference this year in that specific game. And just great vibes for Ole Miss as they head into this bye week. Obviously, you have two of their toughest tests coming, going on the road to Georgia, going on the road to Oklahoma. Those are your next, after Washington State, those are kind of your next two games that are really going to, I think... define what the season could be even more, because I mean, obviously Washington State at home, that's a gimme, right?
Yeah, the next 2 weeks we won't be leading game runs deep with Ole Miss.
No,
because you know, it's a bye week and then Washington State.
Right.
But for this week, even if you weren't Mr. Ole Miss Homer and I wasn't just the Ole Miss dude for all
the number four team in the country.
They're the number four team in the country.
Whether we like the AP poll or not, which we don't.
Yeah. But. If Ole Miss was, I mean, if Alabama was number four, I know what we'd have started with.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Well, that's what we're going to move on to next is we're going to talk about Bama, Georgia. Ate crow on that one, Ben. I mean, I said that I had no doubt that Kirby Smart was going to win, that Georgia
can't
was going to
beat
Bama.
It was Bama. Close, brother. You can't win them all.
It was a close one, and, you know, I mean, he's got a Bama problem. I mean, no matter what Kirby says, what disappointed me the most about Kirby on Saturday night was when he was asked about Alabama specifically. He said, well, what's their record against everybody else? And for a guy that talks about accountability, that talks about the standard is the standard, I was hoping that Kirby would just say, you know what? They've had our number for whatever reason. They've been back and forth. They've been complete slugfest, back and forth games. But for some reason, we haven't been able to get it done. And I wish he would have taken that approach instead of, well, what's their record against everybody else? I still think he's the best head coach in college football. I still think Georgia's the best program in college football. But for some reason, man, there is a mental deal going on. And you saw it in that 4th-and-1 when you should have kicked the field goal probably, right? There were so many situations where I felt like the decision-making was based on the fact that they were playing Alabama and not just another team. I don't want to make this just about Kirby and Georgia. I want to make it about Alabama.
Right.
And Kalen DeBoer and his quarterback.
Even though we bless hearts, we celebrate individual accomplishment, right?
No doubt about it.
Ty Simpson, I'm telling you, I'm buying the stock, Sue. I'm buying it.
I'm with you. And they've got some tough tests ahead. Like, I'm not saying Bama's going to win out the rest of the season. They've got to be in some environments that are going to be tough for the rest of the season. But they, you know, you always talk about your trigger man makes all the difference. They got a hell of a trigger man in Ty Simpson, man. And this was the game that he had to prove himself, because week one was just awful. And everything in between that was what it was. I mean, Wisconsin was a great day for him, but it's Wisconsin. But this was the game on the road in that raucous environment, man. Sanford Stadium, I've been to countless games there now. It is a tough freaking place to play. That's why they'd won 33 straight games. And if I don't know if you've seen some of those behind-the-scenes videos of Ty Simpson, dude. This dude, man, balls of steel, dude. I mean, just riling up his teammates, just the ultimate leader. And I'm also going to give credit to Kalen DeBoer, man. His guys went into that environment, bro. They were not intimidated in the least bit.
Nope.
I mean, they were welcoming all the hate and the environment they were walking themselves into. And they
absolutely feel like Alabama again on Saturday now.
No doubt.
I mean, that was the Alabama competitiveness. I'm not, like the watches and stuff in the NIL era that took over Alabama finally. Yeah. There's some of that, but like, man, they wanted the smoke and they took it.
And that was the signature road win the Bama fans were waiting for from K-1 before. That was the biggest knock. He can't win these big games on the road, and he won the biggest game on the road. Their offense absolutely cooked Georgia in the first half, which is it's insane, right? Kirby Smart,
Alabama fan. Here's the very bottom line point, because we don't want to rehash the games. Y'all have seen the games. We want to make sense of things now. Like, give you perspective here. Alabama is never going to be Alabama ever again. They are not going to be that, and that's not a knock on you. Alabama's still awesome. Like, y'all have got a dude in Ty Simpson. This is the parody era of college football.
Yeah, nobody's going to be nobody. Like, Georgia's not going to be Georgia again. You know what I mean? It's not just a knock on Bama, what you're saying.
Exactly right. So you could spend the next 20 years. I mean, Kalen DeBoer has done nothing but win. Now, he's not gone undefeated every year. That's never happened before. Only one coach has, the greatest coach ever, Nick Saban. Kalen DeBoer is at worst going to win you 9 games. I mean, maybe 8 will be the floor, but that sucks. But he's always going to be hovering around 8 or 9 as the floor. And most times, he's going to be 10-2. You're going to have losses, especially now that you've gone to a 9-game SEC schedule, which is essentially the college version, is the SEC of the NFL. It is the highest level.
That's everyone, right, Ben? I mean,
but it's the highest level here, so you're going to lose games. You can spend the next 20 years saying, oh, well, he's not Nick Saban. Oh, he's not Bear Bryant. Oh, like, blah, blah, blah. Or you can roll with it, and you're going to get everything you always wanted, which is what? Who cares if you go undefeated? You want to win the title.
Right.
He will give you a chance because he will be in that college football playoff conversation every year. Some years he'll miss it. Other years he'll get in. This team can get in, even with probably 2 losses, maybe 3. Even a 9-3 Alabama, depending on the resume, right? That's what we'll talk about.
I mean, a year ago, they would have.
But with this dude at quarterback in this era, dude, you're ahead more than most everybody else.
Right.
Because we have a dearth of, or a lack, a serious lack of quarterback competency right now across every level in football. And Ty Simpson, he is checking way more boxes than Garrett Nussmeier.
No doubt.
Everyone was wanting to say, like, that's why, get rid of the preseason rankings. You need to get rid of the biases or just what you used to think and know.
I just want to rework the AP poll in general.
I do too. But it is a disaster. Like, I grew up and was taught to, you got to hate Mississippi State. I don't hate Mississippi State anymore. That's silly. Like, that's Mississippi greatness. Those are friends of mine. Like, Jeff Lebby was nothing but good to me when I covered him at Ole Miss. I know people on staff. I know Aiden Williams, whose recruitment I cover, and he transferred to Mississippi State. I don't hate Aiden Williams. That's absurd. And so, like, all that stuff, it just doesn't matter anymore. Like, somebody asked me on my board yesterday, again, the Ole Miss on 3 site. Sign up today for just $1. Google search Ole Miss on 3 for $1. There will be. Someone asked in my Ben's All Day Monday AMA, ask me anything. They said, what's the floor now as far as your opinion for record for Ole Miss? I said, 9-3. They said, well, who's the third then now? And I said, State. Because I respect those people. They've done nothing to harm me. So you can say, well, it's us and no one else. Or you can accept that the pack, there's equitable play now more than there's ever been. It's not all the way there, but it's equitable play more than it's ever been in college football, and you are just now one of everybody else. Right. But when you win like you did Saturday against Georgia, in the impressive way you did it with an ascending quarterback, that I'm telling you, I'm buying all the stock, all of it. I want all of it in Ty Simpson.
Ty Simpson's that guy, man.
And you have one of the best teams in college football, and you have every bit the argument that you should be considered the title front runner as anyone else, because everyone's flawed. Everyone has warts.
Yeah.
Ole Miss fans, football season is in full swing, and Underdog is the best place to get in on all the action. Playing on Underdog is easy. Simply pick whether your favorite players in any sport will go higher or lower on stats. For Ole Miss, that's touchdowns, receiving yards, interceptions, and more. Think Ole Miss quarterback Trinidad Chambliss will go over or under 2.5 combined touchdowns this week. I did too. It's why I made my picks on Underdog, the place to win money all season long. Ole Miss greats DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown have been winning picks all season long in the NFL. Get your picks right and you can win up to 5,000 times your cash. And you can play with as little as $1. Download the Underdog app today and sign up with my promo code, CHAMPIONS, to score $100 in bonus funds or entries when you play your first $5. That's promo code CHAMPIONS. Millions of fans have already won billions making picks on Underdog. Will you be next? Underdog. Make picks. Win money. Must be 18 years or older to play. 19 plus in Alabama and Nebraska, 19 plus in Colorado for some games, 21 plus in Arizona, Massachusetts, and Virginia. Must be present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. See UnderdogFantasy.com for details. Offer not valid in Maryland, Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In New York, call the 247-HOPE-LINE at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
No doubt about it. It was a very impressive performance on them. And obviously, you know, what Kirby Smart and Georgia are really good at, it's what they've been good at the entire time he's been there, has been those adjustments. I mean, they have really the last 3 years started out slow in the first half and gained it in the second. Now, when you do play a team like Alabama, you obviously got to get out to a faster start than they were able to do. But that's all Bama needed, man, was that first half. And the rest of the game, they just let their defense do the work. They made opportune plays on offense. And they were able to, you know, win the game. And obviously, I think there were some mistakes on Georgia's end as far as coaching is concerned as well. But the biggest concerns for me with Georgia were look, I thought Georgia's pass rushers were going to come along at some point this season. And I thought this would be the game that, hey, we're going to go after Ty Simpson. And they were massively unsuccessful at that. They had a guy in Elo Meduze coming into the season. It was an Army transfer, posted great numbers a year ago. That was they were raving about in training camp. When I was still covering Georgia at the time, you can go find the video, I think. I did a whole video on this guy about how big of a factor he was going to be because that's what I was hearing. He's been a complete non-factor. All of these five stars and four stars that you've racked up along your defensive line, the linebacking core, they've gotten no pressure. Your secondary is atrocious. I mean, one of your best players, Ellis Robinson, a young guy that you thought was going to be able to make an impact now as a, I believe, a sophomore now, had one of the most boneheaded plays on that fourth and one where he jumped on top of the pile. It's just, it doesn't feel like Georgia right now. It's like undisciplined. It's like they're playing nervous. They're not playing with that same intensity they were. And like I said, Kirby loves to say the standard is the standard. Well, the standard's not being met right now. No. And I'm not saying Georgia ain't going to make the playoff or any of that stuff, but they got to look at themselves in the mirror right now and figure out what the hell they have to do to get back to that standard because it hasn't been met the last couple of weeks. I mean, between the Tennessee game and almost losing that one on the road, the Bama game now, like there's going to be tough guys. Look, I'm not expecting Ole Miss to walk into Sanford Stadium and beat Georgia. But it's not going to be easy for Georgia. Like I know it's not away this year for them. It's at home, but like Trinidad Chambliss is a legitimate threat against this Georgia defense based on what we've seen right now because he could literally move around in the pocket and buy time to find his weapons, which he has plenty of. And I don't know if that Georgia secondary is going to be able to. So there's a lot of questions defensively for Georgia, in my opinion. Offense, I think they've got some things coming along. I love what I saw from Chauncey Bowens. I was a little confused as to why Zachariah Branch wasn't more involved, especially in some of those critical plays. But yeah, if you're a Georgia fan, obviously my eyes would sort of go more to the defense. I know the second half was better, but I want to see that Georgia intensity that I didn't see. So obviously Bama's feeling really good right now at one loss and Georgia fans are feeling a little down at one loss, but you're still both one loss teams. Both still have a whole season ahead of you and the opportunity to obviously make a playoff push. Ben, there's a lot more to talk about as far as recaps are concerned. We could talk about how Wake Forest got screwed by the officials, but we went on a whole diatribe a week ago on how officials are not held responsible for their decision. So we don't have to touch that again. Just know that Georgia Tech.
And man, we kicked a hornet's nest with that one.
We sure did. Oh boy,
I didn't know we had so many company men in the college football. All my friends out there in the village, the college football village. You know, we're a big community, right?
Yeah.
How come so many of y'all we're not Auburn and Oklahoma people.
No. No,
you know, I'm just saying, I'm not saying that Auburn got robbed of the game or anything like that. I'm saying that officials weren't being held accountable.
That's the whole point.
An egregious mistake. And right. It was a bigger point. We're not talking about the game and the result and all that. I don't care about all that. Like, right. I would be pissed if I'm an Auburn fan because, like, I've been on that side of it before for my team, whoever that team is for you. What the point is like, referees have a level of autonomy. And that, I mean, they're completely protected from any and all accountability. In what workforce place do you have no accountability, public accountability?
Right.
Where? That there is nowhere to be found.
Doesn't exist.
Nowhere to be found. And this is big business, which it is now. We got a 9-game SEC schedule coming. I mean, you know, who's the most powerful man in college football? Not the NCAA commission. They don't matter anymore. It's Greg Sankey. So a 9-game SEC schedule is coming. Big dollars now. Like, bigger than – I mean, this is big business. They have to be accountable because livelihoods and people's recreational wagering, all of this stuff is reliant on – as I mean, they're your shareholders now.
Yeah.
You got to hold those guys accountable. Otherwise, your shareholders.
And the worst part is some people will say, well, they are taking accountability. They released a statement.
Nope.
I don't want a damn statement.
Yep.
You don't get it. You know, like, what world, Ben, can you, like, you screw up massively and you put out a statement? Hey, sorry, I didn't do my job. Can't change it now. And then you just keep going. That doesn't exist in any other profession. I can't remember who it was. Somebody sent me a clip or something. And it might have been Josh Pate. I can't remember who it was. Somebody was talking about how maybe you should
name dropping JP?
I might. That's your guy, man. I've never met him. I've only met him once, man.
He was very kind to me. I met him at media day.
His story's great. The more I learn about the guy, the more I'm like, I do want to meet him. But my point is, I need to
know what his workout regimen is. It's got to be. I mean, it's way better than mine. I'm just saying, like, does he have like a beginner's guide? You know, those for dummy books? Hey, Josh, can I get the Ben Garrett for dummies version of your workout plans? Because it's not like I want to look like you, like a Greek Adonis. I just want to, like, maybe see an ab for the first time.
One of the few people that can make being bald work, man, Josh Pate. But
rocking it out, man.
Killing it, man. And
like,
so,
if I ever go bald, I've said this, because look at me, I look like a marshmallow. Or like a melting hippo, as Andy Samberg said one time. Like, dude, if this goes, I can't pull off bald.
I've always said I'm going to be a monk. If I have to shave my head, brother, you will never see me on camera again. I will just go join a monastery.
I like to think that, like, by that point, we'll have been advanced to, like, I can just get legit hair. Like, it'll just, like,
oh, dude, we'll have, by 2030, you know, UCLA's got that peptide they're working on right now. They can literally regrow hair now. So, we're getting massively off track here. But I believe it was Josh Pate. Somebody sent me a clip about it of, like, maybe the conference should pay the school because the school gets fined when fans rush the field or when you criticize the officials. What if the SEC, when they screw up a call, go, hey, Auburn, you lost that game. We're sorry. Here's $200,000. I think that's not a bad solution, in my opinion. Because, like, you lose. You can't bring the game back. You can't replay it. But at least we get a couple $100,000 for our NIL fund.
Let me ask you a question. What seems more equitable and fair? I got to pay the team I just beat $500,000 for celebrating. Without doubt, Storm of the Field has got to stop. I mean, I can't remember what game it was. I botched so much football. I'm sleep deprived right now. But, like, the quickest is Virginia.
Virginia. I was going to bring that up.
Like, I was
scared for the players.
Me too. Like, I was legitimately scared for the one in the end zone especially.
Yes,
like,
I thought he got trampled, man.
I never saw him stand up. I'm like, this is awful. So there's real, like, I love the passion. We don't want to eliminate the passion, but, like, we got to take care of each other. We got to love our neighbors here. I mean, we got to watch out for this. So, like, which seems more fair and equitable or not absurd? paying having to pay your opponent, the opponent that you just beat, who's dejected, $500,000 for rushing the field in celebration of achievement.
Yeah.
Or $2,000 for the officials. And the officials means they're the ones who enforce the rules. They're your police. Just for getting behind a mic and saying, this is why I made the decision I did. What are the consequences other than to say, well, I mean, he might be held accountable because he'll have a record then of bad calls. People will account for that. And, yeah, if he's not performing at the level he's supposed to, he will be fired. But that's fair, just like it is for all of us. Yeah. In everything we do, that is just fairness.
Yeah. No, they love to talk about, well, protecting officials and this, that, and the other. And I get it. Like, no person should be harassed for doing their job.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
right.
You
We're
should not,
not
be harassed.
About harassment. We're talking about basic accountability.
Protect them from that. Protect them from those kind of things. But
yes.
Good God, man. I mean, like you're saying, one, answer questions after the game. But two, if you're the conference employing this person, we got to find a solution for you to fix whatever happened. That's not just a statement, man. I want to go a step further. Like I said, I believe it was Josh Pate in this clip that someone sent me, but it's like, you should definitely, the conference should pay the school in some form or fashion, or give them something for, hey, we screwed up a massive play in a game. Like, Wake Forest today should have that win over Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
They were on their way to winning the game and running the clock out. And Robbie Ashford said, oh, that guy's in the neutral zone. I get a free play, and he throws the ball, and it never gets called. It was clear as day. What the hell was the line judge doing? That Oklahoma game. What was that guy? That guy was watching the game instead of watching the play on that pass interference call. So that's all we're asking for. We're not trying to rehash this every single week, because there's going to be a bad call here and there, and that's just football. It's going to happen. But it's these game-defining, moment-changing plays that you need accountability on, and we're just not getting it. So we'll leave it at that, Ben, because we do kind of have to move. James Franklin's ceiling at Penn State, is it kind of what we saw Saturday? You think that's just what it's going to be forever?
And that's enough in this environment, but it's not going to be enough for Penn State. He's a victim of his own success. Yeah. In this new environment, if they would leave him alone, you're going to be in the college football playoff conversation. Now, you might say, well, he never gets over the hump. It's a valid criticism if you look at the record. But you're not going to – at best, you're starting over. I mean, are you content with always being in the conversation, knowing that one year, or living on the hope that, you're going to break through? You keep knocking on the door. Eventually, you're going to break through. I mean, that's how these things work. But do you have the patience, or do you think you have to make an evaluation as a business and say, is your CEO delivering what you the expectations are? I would encourage you to lower your expectations. Not say, well, 6-6 isn't acceptable. It's never acceptable. It wasn't acceptable back when they put you in meaningless bowl games.
I just don't know if they know how to pick quarterbacks over there. That's my biggest issue.
It's like, Drew Aller is a disappointment.
He is, massively. And then you look at Perbula.
Like, I don't know him personally. He seems like I'm sure he's a great dude. But, like, they needed you to be a little bit more.
And then you look at Perbula at Missouri, and you wonder, well, did they let the wrong guy go?
Is it just
because Drinkwitz can develop better than James Franklin? I think those are the coaching questions you could ask.
Drinkwitz is going to be a much more popular candidate this offseason in the coaching carousel than people even understand or realize. Jobs are going to come open that surprise us all. We all think Florida, but this is big business now. Like, these, they don't care anymore. Yeah. It's about doing one thing and one thing only, going 1-0 every single week. Like I said, with the Trinidad Chambliss, Austin Simmons settled law at this point. Yeah. If you're a college football fan, you've got to weigh the cost, because are you going to improve on the results that keep knocking on the door, or do you just want to completely start over? Yeah, you can go buy all the players in the portal, but you're trusting different evaluators who are unproven potentially. Maybe you go get Eli Drinkwitz, and he has the same recruiting success. And his first year, you go 9-3 and say, well, they had to change. Look what James Franklin left him with, right? This is what, like, the sky is up. And then he goes 9-3 again, because this is what college football is now.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Like, why?
Yeah.
I think it's a much more complicated discussion, but I believe they're complete Penn State fans, and, like, I've been in those shoes.
There are legitimate questions as far as, like, offensive development, quarterback development, and why you can't seem to win these big games despite it being at home and all this stuff. I think there are X's and O's things you can look at, but like you're saying, overall, man, James Franklin's a really good football coach. He made Austin Carter Samuels look good at Vanderbilt, man. I mean, he made Vandy a contender.
That is a cool pseudo. Can I clap for you?
Please clap.
Dude,
please
that
clap.
One
Thank
was
you.
Good.
Thank you.
I love that one.
Thank you. And so, like, we know he can coach football, and he's going to make Penn State good. But I think the ceiling for Penn State is always going to be borderline playoff team, every now and then outright playoff team. I think that's just what it is. it's a tough conference, and you got a lot of other like coaches, obviously, between Ryan Day and Dan Lanning and Kurt Cignetti. Like, the Big Ten is a tough conference. So if you're a Penn State fan, like, I think the popular opinion right now is, well, he just can't win the big game, blah, 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 blah. Penn State can't go undefeated. And I don't think that's the right approach, but I think if you look at X's and O's, it goes, why is it that Penn State can't seem to develop a elite quarterback? Why has Drew Aller been in that system for a few years and he's almost regressed?
You want me to wrap this up with a hilarious comparison I think you'll love?
Sure.
Maybe James Franklin is the Brian Snitker of college football head coaches. In that, he's an organizational man.
Yeah.
But all it takes is 1 year of magic. And there's never been more ways to conjure that magic than there is now in college football.
Right.
He's going to always be knocking on the door. Who's to say this year, like, yeah, they could bounce back next week. All teams are equal. There are no dominant teams in college football.
Right.
And if you keep trying to make a case for one, you're going to keep coming up looking like an idiot or going, how did that happen? Because anything can happen now. And that is beautiful. That's
right.
All the cynicism we all have about how the money is distributed. I'm glad labor's finally getting paid. You know, I've been holding down that stance for a long time.
Right.
That's the beauty of the new era, is that anybody can win. And if anybody can win, and all communities can celebrate or have the hope of celebration, that should be something that we all celebrate rather than go, well, holding any person, all of us are flawed, all of us are sinners and fall short of the glory of God. How could you then say, well, if James Franklin doesn't win 11 games, or if he doesn't win a national championship this year, he could win it next year. He could still win it this year.
Sure.
Yeah, that loss was bad. Drew Aller, you're not playing particularly well right now, fella, but you seem like a good dude. You've done a lot of good things in your career. They need you to take another step. That's all fair. You know what isn't fair? Saying, well, he's not a good coach, or has he hit his ceiling? What ceiling? Like, what expectations are we holding these people to? Are we saying that every coach has to be Bear Bryant? Well, we've had coaches that surpassed Bear Bryant, and y'all still talk about comparing coaches to Bear Bryant. Like, what are we doing?
The problem is that Nick Saban almost broke college football in the sense of, like, he did something that can't be done again, and he did it in an era that won't come back. And he left, like, at the perfect time. You know what
yes.
I mean? He came in, he broke college football with the way he ran Alabama, and obviously had advantages that other schools didn't at the time. And then when everybody else got on equal footing, he disappeared. He said, I'm
That's
out.
That's right.
That's my legacy.
See, because, hey, shocker, the visionary in his particular field, his unique field, the visionary in all of history in his particular field, Nick Saban, he was that revolutionary and unprecedented in everything that he did. He knew it was time to get out, not because he was like, well, now everybody can pay the same Nick Saban. It was more about he's 73, what the era that he knew and was and pushed to the limits of, as he should. Why don't – I mean, you try to win. The winning is the only thing. 1-0.
And he would have been successful in the NIL era had he been younger. He would have figured it out. Not in the same proportion and level, right?
Exactly, dude.
Because of you can't just stack those guys. And the same with Kirby Smart. Everybody talks about, well, why? Ah, man, Kirby Smart, two straight natties. Oh my God, why hasn't been? Because the era changed. He wasn't able to have the same level of
depth. Straight national championships.
I know.
He's done the thing that you probably prayed for at one time as a kid twice in the last 2 years. My goodness.
If he never wins again, he's still a college football Hall of Famer, right?
100%. It's okay to be disappointed because, of course, you want to win every game you play, but that's also the beauty of the era you live in now. One win doesn't have to cost you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't let one mistake compound onto another. You know what I mean? Like, yes, 1 week can be a bad week. And then you turn the page and all could be right with the world. Florida State is still a college football playoff contender for this particular unique season.
Yeah.
After last year, and everybody said, oh, Mike Norvell is toast. Florida State, I really want to, you know, hat tip to them. They shrewdly made the move of holding on to Mike Norvell because of the cost analysis they made. And you know what? They're being rewarded. Now, Virginia was a bad loss for them as far as what they're trying to do this year. But he should be applauded for the job he did. Not have his credentials questioned. If Billy Napier continues to lose like he is, of course it's gonna. We know what the outcome of that would be. We think we know what the outcome of that would be. The thing is, he could, and it's true because he's got a former 5-star, number one Parade All-American at quarterback. He's got all. He got here for a reason. He's not some scrub that they just like paid pennies to. He had his pick of SEC jobs at one point. Ole Miss would have taken him in a heartbeat. Mississippi State wanted him desperately. He turned them down. You know, like Arkansas. I mean, every school that had an open up until when he took Florida at least entertained him.
Right.
Do I believe that he could turn things around? What's the record, Sudo? I don't remember.
Who?
We got Florida? 3 losses. Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe what 1 win, 2 wins.
All right, cool. They have 3 losses at least.
Yeah.
All right, cool. If they win out, they're 9-3. They'll be the South Carolina this year. They'd be left out probably, but they'd be in the consideration. And everybody thought South Carolina should have gotten in, and look at South Carolina. A year later, just a year, not even a year later.
Yeah.
Not even a year later.
Yeah. Now, the preseason stuff is absolutely, I mean, that's just ridiculous. But for once again, just to put a button on Penn State, I think, like, you have what you have, which is a great coach. You're going to win 9-10 games every year. You're always going to be in contention for the playoff. Some years it may be you're going to be the 12th seed. Some years it may be you're going to be the 5 seed, 4 seed. That just kind of is what it is. But my thing for Penn State fans is if your argument is he can't win the big game, we should get rid of him, that's not an argument to me. But if you go look at his X's and O's and go, well, there are some development issues, then you may have a point. But I still don't think it's enough to get rid of James Franklin at Penn State. All right, we're going to have to bless some hearts here, Ben. We had some pretty incredible plays. We got 7 plays from Week 5 of college football that had you and me watching and just saying, bless your heart. So I'm going to start us off with the game we were just talking about, Oregon and Penn State. So this game was tied in double overtime. Dante Moore is a Heisman contender, and it's for a reason. And if I can get this video to load, you'll see it right here. Moore, supposed to be sacked, some way, somehow gets rid of that ball. I call that the yoga pose, Ben. That's Danny Dennis Sutton. Danny Dennis Sutton, you were there, and then you weren't. Bless your heart, my man. You got something from UGA Bama for us, huh?
Yes, Georgia Bama late second quarter. Caden Proctor, the offensive lineman, the offensive tackle on the screen pass. I mean, he's a tank. He's a tank.
No answers.
Look at this. How do you stop this?
You can't.
Bless
your
heart, friend. Bless your heart, friend. Bless your heart, friend. Now, did he step out? Yes. He deserved the touchdown because I will always, forever until they put me into the ground, friend, close my eyes for the final time, say big man touchdowns should be the most celebrated play in football. Forever and always. Former offensive lineman right here. I sucked. I'm not Caden Proctor, but buddy, you just lived my dream. Bless your heart and bless your heart to the Georgia players that could not bring that hoss down.
As a near impossible task. I mean, it's amazing that they even got him to get out of bounds and not score there. But yeah, Georgia's defense, bless your heart. All right, we're going to go next to USC Illinois. This one, obviously, Illinois ended up winning, but we're going to pick it up late fourth quarter. Trojans were down, needing a touchdown. Jaden Maiava finds his boy Makai Lemon, a little lemonade, if you will. And I feel really bad for Illinois' DB there. That's Tanner Heckler. He was there to make the play, but then his mood soured real quick, if you catch my drift there,
Ben. You can tell that his feelings were hurt, too, a little bit.
Did you see that? He kind of crouched down. Oh, my God. Tanner Heckler, bless your heart, my friend. Benjamin, Auburn, Texas A&M didn't go Auburn's way, but they had a couple plays in there that had A&M looking silly, including this one.
Yes, Aggies up 10, driving for more. Oh, no! Xavier Atkins had other plans, gets the pickoff, goes to the hands of Terry Bussey, breaks that tackle, and watch him. Oh, the cutback. And then, I mean, listen, that is bad. I really want to start with the wide receiver. Bless your heart, because, dude, it hit your hands. I know it was a high throw. Bless your heart. And then my guy.
Demon
time.
That
is as alligator arms get. That's Marcell Reed, folks. That is a Texas A&M starting quarterback who threw that interception, threw it a little bit too high, was on the Heisman list last week. Nothing changes. He's great. He's a great player, former Ole Miss recruit. But, buddy, bless your heart. Where in the world, when in your football career, because I know you hadn't played just quarterback your entire life, in what world when you were playing free safety for your high school in Texas? In what world is that how you break down and make
a
tackle?
What I love about Marcell there, Ben, is I don't even think that Atkins had to go that way. It's like he cut back to just take down Marcell Reed.
Take his ankles. That's okay. That is the stuff. That's the spirit of the thing that we should embrace more. Now, that is so fun. Marcell Reed, you're fine, young buck. You're great. You're a good quarterback. But, dude, he totally got you on that one.
He was like, let me just cut back and grab another one. Marcell Reed, Terry Bussey. Hey, guys. Bless your heart. All right, this next game we're going to look at, TCU Arizona State. We're going to pick it up late second quarter, and Sam Levitt shows you why he's an exciting player. Look at that. Shoestring tackle, miss. Yeah. Guy on skates, 3 and 4, hit that circle button on him, Ben.
Take him.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait.
Austin Jordan, then Caleb Alarms Orr, and Nnamdi Obiazor.
They smashed it to each other.
That's number 1, 3, and 4. It was like he was abusing the numerical system. Fellas, bless your heart. All right, Ben, I know you're excited about this one. This is Ole Miss LSU, and what a blessing Keewon Lacy has been.
Keewon Lacy, second in the nation in missed tackles forced. And when he says he's not going down, friends, he is not going
he
down.
He means it.
He had a lot of help going into the end zone. I mean, getting close to the end zone, excuse me. But look at this. Here, the rally that comes behind him from an offensive line that struggled in week one but is really just paving the way now. Plus, Caleb Odom, converted wide receiver, now at tight end, driving Keewon Lacy, the untackleable running back.
Hey, I mean, look at the way he keeps Harold those
Perkins,
legs.
Harold Perkins, bless your heart. You're awesome. Absolutely awesome. And, man, I'm so happy to see that you bounced back in such a big way after some weird positional stuff that you've had to deal with in your career. But on that play against that army of rebels storming into the end zone, bless your heart.
Bless your heart to the whole Tiger defense.
Whole Tiger.
All day.
It just became rugby. I told you that when we were sitting there. You remember? Yep. So it's rugby, baby. You know, we're rugby. And so, yes, bless your heart, LSU defense. But Harold Perkins, man, you did, I guess, you messed around and found out. But bless your heart.
All right. And our final play comes from Virginia Tech, NC State. We're going to pick it up in the third quarter here. This is Virginia Tech running back Terrion Stewart. One missed tackle. Oh. He takes out everyone there, including the referee. And then this is just sad. Oh. Number 16. My goodness, that was J.J. Johnson, the safety. So that Caden Fordham was number one. And then the three defenders and the referee, I don't know how they all went down like bowling pins there. And J.J. Johnson.
Wiped out.
Look at this. Just the juke. Whoa, 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 whoa.
But the referee, you have a wellness check on the referee, Sudo.
Someone definitely go check on him. But fellas, everyone on that NC State defense and the referee there, bless your heart. All right, Benny, I know you got to run, but before we got three really big games, in my opinion. One, Texas is going to Florida, right? Arch Manning going to face this vaunted Florida defense. Number two, Vanderbilt going to Bama. Diego Pavia looking to repeat. And then obviously.
Tell him about Vandy being Ben's team. Come on.
That is your team. And then number three, Miami going on the road to Tallahassee to face the Florida State Seminoles. They're going to be looking for an upset. Out of those three games, I want you to pick, I guess Texas-Florida wouldn't be an upset, but, you know, out of those three games, who is most likely to win, in your opinion? Slash, does Florida, Vanderbilt, or Florida State get the upsets in those
Florida matchups? State's winning this weekend. It's my upset pick. It's the game I'm watching and most paying attention to. I hope that it is proof positive to the people who actually pay attention to this fun podcast that we just threw together. I just threw together with my friend, or he did all of it. He's just the most talented person I've ever known in this business. Maybe you can draw back on this. It would be the perfect representation of the new era of college football, like we've been talking about for an hour and 10 minutes. Parity reigns. What was last week can be what isn't a week later. So, yes, they lost to Virginia, but they're still the team that beat Alabama. And Alabama's this weekend was the team that beat Georgia. And Miami is probably through with the results and through the first 5 weeks of the college football season. Yes, they are fairly ranked number one or two in most every poll. They deserve to be because of the results, but they're not big. They're not the U. This isn't Ray Lewis and Michael Irvin and Sean Taylor. I mean, these are good players, but there's just as many, if not more, good players on Florida State. Now, I will say the quarterback matchup between Carson Beck and Tommy Castellanos, I would give the nod right now to Carson Beck, of course, but this is a prove it game for him.
Yeah.
You know, like, cause he's really risen, like raised his stock in the NFL draft. Like Carson Beck, I don't know who the consensus is for most people for the best quarterback or who's going to go first, but like, why is Carson Beck not that guy right now? Like if we're just picking from this field, I'm not saying he's even, you know, worth that consideration. I'm just saying if this is what you're pulling from and all the ones that will be eligible to be considered for that pick, Carson Beck's just as good as them, but like he could really add some rocket fuel to all of it if he beats them. This
is
Florida
a
State
big,
team.
Big prove
big
game.
Game. Yeah,
100%.
And I'm predicting Florida State to win, not because I think Carson Beck's going to screw up. I think he's going to play well. He's a great quarterback. He's my favorite. I mean, I think he's the best quarterback in college football right now. He's checking the most boxes. That's more astute, I would say. All right. It's not about him. I just think Florida State's a good football team. Yeah, they lost to Virginia. Good on Virginia. They had a better team. Stop storming the field when the players are in the end zone. It's horrifying. But that doesn't diminish the quality of a team that Florida State is this year. They're good, as good, if not better, than everyone else. So
yeah.
Where is it playing? Where's the game played?
That's going to be in Tallahassee. So it'll
all
be
right,
on
so
the road.
Now you feel what I'm – now you're buying what I'm selling?
I do. And listen, I came on here last week and I said Miami might be the most dominant roster top to bottom. Like their defense
and
is
I object
right?
all of that. I did it immediately. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that another day.
Their offensive line moves bodies. Their running backs run downhill. Like they have every component that you need to be an elite football team. And Carson, like I said, I don't even necessarily think Carson Beck is that elite as far as the next level is concerned. But I
think
everything around him, that's what makes Miami the best team as far as a roster standpoint. I'm not even saying they're the best. Like I think Oregon and Ohio State could have a better case than Miami. That's why they're ranked ahead of them. But I do think that Miami is a complete. But this is the big test for me. I'm not going to say I'm still going to take Miami in this one until they prove me wrong. I'm going to take Miami, but it's easily Florida State could win. I mean, it is not in any shape or form a given that Miami is going to win this game or something. Like I do believe Florida State can win this game. I'm still going to take Miami. I'm going to take Vandy over Bama just for the hell of it. I mean, Diego Pavia, you know, obviously not.
Are you
not
joining me? Are you not, joining me in the club?
Look, I do love Pavia. Obviously, he's not that much of a threat through
it's
the air.
It's the anchor ball. It's the anchor ball. Let's go. Right. You with us?
But he's a gamer. He's a gamer, and Vandy's going to be going in with this swagger and this attitude. I'm going to take them for just for shits and gigs, honestly. I think Vandy's going to be fun to take here.
Did I take your team, Sudo?
And then
did I take your pick?
No, okay, not good. At all. That's all a good right. one. And then Texas at Florida, man. Arch Manning, prove it game. Hey, Ohio State didn't work out for you. That was a tough one. Florida's defense, really tough. You're going to be at the Swamp. This is your moment, Arch. This is your moment. You got this opportunity. Take it, man, because Georgia's going to be also be on the road for him. So this is a great test right now against a solid defense to make a statement that when you were bucking up to that Sam Houston State DB, it wasn't for nothing, that it was building to something coming off that bye week. Come on, man. There it is. Beat Florida in the Swamp and get the love back from the rest of the country. Whether, you know, that's right or wrong to go up and down on a guy like the way it's been done on Arch this year.
That sounded terrible, like what I said to start the show. Go
pause,
up and down.
Pause. Ayo. Anyways. All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Game Runs Deep. He's Spirit Ben. Follow him on Twitter at Spirit Ben. I'm Sudo TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. You can find all our content on each of our channels, obviously
on
YouTube
on
as well.
Stuff. I'm telling you, folks, this dude's a superstar.
Oh, man.
I'm not just saying that because I do it with him. Again, what is wrong with this? The phrasing.
I've been paying Ben to run PR for me. Surprise.
Yeah, well, hey, look, man. I mean, if you want to send a check, you say check in the mail. I would welcome it with open arms. But no, I love this show, man. I thank you for letting me do it with you, for letting me ramble and rant about teams that I don't get to talk about. But because every day for me, it's Ole Miss, Ole Miss, Ole Miss over at Rebel Grove, on Three's Ole Miss site. Sign up today for just $1. It's all Ole Miss all the time for me mostly. But once a week I get to sit down and talk about, hey, I sympathize with James Franklin. You know, like it's nice to get to share that. And for people that actually respond to our stuff in a visceral way because Sudo is the one that knows how to get it to you people, I'm getting a kick out of it. I'm tickled pink about it.
Well, appreciate all the people. Like I was in Oxford this weekend and so many people came up to me that I didn't even know. And this is where Ben's reach comes into play because these are the Ole Miss people that are finding me like, hey, love your podcast with Ben, you know, or even my own friends or people that I haven't maybe seen in years that are supporting and listening. Really appreciate you guys. And obviously all of our loyal followers on TikTok and Instagram. What's your favorite, Benny?
You know how cool it is for like, old teenager Ben to like know that DJ Shockley thinks I'm pretty good at talking about stuff. Like I watched that dude at Georgia. Like I DJ Shockley is one of the coolest names. And like I played as DJ Shockley in college football games before they went away for a decade, but out of greed. Like nice. It's so.
Yeah, Shock, you know, Shock's my guy. Worked with him.
We need Shock for years. For Georgia Week. Okay?
He will be here. I've already talked.
That's his boy.
I've already
y'all
talked
together.
To
him. Yeah. You're, like, I'm your guy, I'm your boy, I'm your dude, he's your dude, y'all work together, we need him for Georgia Week, and if I fangirl a little bit, just let me do my thing.
He'll
okay?
love it. He will love okay. it. He never okay. says no to that.
That's
but yeah,
the favorite.
Look forward to that. If you guys aren't subscribed to us on Spotify, please do, and look forward to that. And anyone that, and someone also asked me about the video version of this podcast, it is available in its entirety on Spotify. It's free. You don't have to even make a Spotify account to listen to it. So tons of places for you to find it, obviously. And thanks for joining us again. For Ben, I'm Sudu. We'll see you guys next week.